everybody, this is Robin Ayoub again from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording. With this episode today, which is the fourth, I think, and we're recording episode 207, believe it or not. And I want to thank you all for joining me on this journey of this particular episode and all the other episodes that we've recorded over the 2.5 years we've been online. I record on Thursdays and Fridays, generally, unless there's some exceptions during the week. But this week, we'll probably be recording about 10 episodes. I love the guests that we host on this channel. I love the audience and the interaction with the audience. I heard it from everything from, I love your voice. I can't drop the podcast because I love listening to your voice, to the topics that we're bringing in, to the experts that we're bringing in. And we're targeting a variety of angles in humanity sciences, from the languages we speak, the way we communicate with each other, to the human sciences behind how do we feel better about ourselves. I had a podcast earlier. We talked about the burnout that people are feeling when they work alone as a freelancers. And we dug into the psychology of this, the neurosciences around it. And my guest today, he started his career, and this is also complementary to what we've been doing before and follow the same track of conversation that we've been talking about for a while now. My guest today started his career as a high-performing sales executive, earning President's Club 6 times across industries from automotive to SaaS, always ranking at the top 10% of nationally. And somewhere between the boardroom wins and the near-death experience that cracked him wide open, he became something rarer than the top performer. He became builder of systems of human beings. That's very important. And he's the founder of itspurelove.com. Check it out on his website, itspurelove.com. The creator of ELA, EQOS, and we'll talk about that a little bit. We'll try to understand what that is. An emotional operating system for optimal human performance. And we definitely need some sort of an optimal human performance systems to help us nowadays. And this couldn't be more timely than it is right now, this conversation. And the architect of EXEM, neuroconditioning and protocol that doesn't teach emotional intelligence so much as it installs it. Wow, this is powerful, guys. He's navigated severe childhood trauma, DID, complex PTSD, bipolar 1, and ADHD, and then did what very few people do. He turned every single one of those experiences into a framework that 5,000 leaders and professionals are now using to eliminate burnout, build real human connection. The science here, guys, is real. The story is remarkable. I can't wait to dig into it. And this conversation is going to go deep, and it's going to go to some places that probably we'd never thought about that because we're all busy. We're all doing a million things at the same time. This is going to open our eyes to some things that we've neglected over the years. And, you know, I'm in my 60s and I can't stop learning. I'm always learning. I'm looking forward to learn more today from my guest of honor, Thane Martin. Welcome to the Localization Fireside Chat. It's an honor to have you with me.
Likewise, I'm looking forward to this amazing conversation and that introduction. Thank you so much.
Thane, as we say on this channel, everybody's got a story. Let's start from the beginning. What is your story in your own words?
Yeah. So my story, it starts in my childhood. And I share that because that's where self-limiting beliefs come from. They come from our childhood when we learn things that we didn't necessarily make the right decision on. And we were children and we didn't have mature brains. We didn't have good decision-making skills. And we certainly hadn't developed any kind of long-term decision-making, which doesn't develop until our early to mid-20s. So the reason I share that is because there were things that happened to me as a child. Sadly, I was abused by a religious cult, and it affected my development as a child, and I developed some really peculiar conditions. So at one time, I was diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder. I was diagnosed with complex PTSD, catatonic state, and then severe ADHD and bipolar 1. On top of all of that, married an absolutely amazing woman. I've been with her 38 years, the love of my life. I would not be here if it wasn't for her. Grateful for that. I've got 3 daughters and I had an amazing career. I've been so blessed to work for some of the best companies out there, some very innovative, very driven, well-managed companies. And so I cut my teeth. Ended up in sales of all things, even though I have my first degree was actually in commercial real estate and consulting, which I did very well at. I've been an entrepreneurial person and a consultant my whole life, but I will tell you that the stage for me today is the biggest stage I've been on and the one that I'm most excited about.
Really appreciate it. And you know, like what you experienced in your life early on. I see a lot of symmetry. I'm a person who grew up in a civil war in Beirut in the 80s. You know, I had to do things in my life. Like if we had the affordability of getting this whole treatment, or at least somebody scan us or look at us at that time when we were young, I think we would be where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. So I ended up, developing a nervous system and a brain that was not organized like everybody else's. When you have peculiar disorders like that, it made my life very difficult. Interestingly, I was very, very successful at what I did despite these conditions. But it also reached a point in my life where my trauma came back. And I did like many professionals do that experience trauma as kids. We try and outrun it. And men, particularly when there's shame involved, it's really difficult to outrun it. That's what I tried to do. And it caught up with me. My mental health was in the tank. And interestingly, as a leader leading massive organizations of salespeople, the one thing you learn as a leader is that there's always consistent people at the top of the chart. And then there's always a moment in time when that person is not on the top of that chart. And there's something going on in the life of that person that's impacting their performance. And the more and more I did in executive management and understanding and being a good leader, it made me realize that these people that I were leading had so many other issues outside of work that were actually affecting their performance. So I had one person in particular that was a superstar. This guy was 170% of plan on a regular basis, a rock star with 40 years of experience for the company. And then one year, everything went to hell in a handbasket. And I was his manager. And I'm looking at his performance and I know this man. And I'm like, there has to be something else going on. So, we have leaders, we have an obligation to be human. I think that's really important to realize that the people that work for us, that support us in our business, are human beings. And they go home to families and friends just like we do. And so we all know of things that have happened in our own lives that have impacted us at work. So I watched this particular rock star sales guy completely implode because he wasn't capable of managing some personal issues regarding a divorce that suddenly came late in life for him. So he wasn't able to emotionally balance the feelings and the negativity around the divorce, and he brought it to work. And it affected him and his performance, which affected me. It affected my income. It affected my bonus because this employee could not balance his emotional energy. And that was kind of my first eye opener that as a leader, I needed to have a better understanding of literally the emotional health of the employee. And that's what kind of set me on, down a path of trying to be a better manager by teaching people skills to my employees. It wasn't about selling. They all knew how to be salesperson, but what they didn't know how to do was how to balance their emotional energy. Because let's be real, salespeople are hotheads. We're all type A. We're very driven. We're high energy people. And we know that. We also bring sometimes a lot of baggage with it. That's just kind of the nature of sales guys. You go into any company and you know who the sales guys are. Okay?
Right.
In the end, that's my story. I had a near-death experience, and I'll touch on it. I was given some medication I should never have been given, and I was involved in an accidental drowning, and I literally lost my life. And that event, waking up at the bottom of the pool, realizing something had happened, that was life-changing for me. And I have a very vivid memory of that experience and what that was like. And when I came out of that coma, I realized that my life needed to change and corporate America was not where I belonged. And so I walked away from corporate America and I spent the last 2.5 years and $250,000 developing this technology, researching it, and getting it ready to put out there in the world. It's different, but it's literally revolutionary in the way that we are teaching.
You know, when somebody goes through what you went through, and I can just reflect back on myself in this case. Can you analyze to me or to the audience, how can somebody go through what you went through and instead of being an introvert becomes an extrovert and enters the sales arena? Normally when people go through these things, they just go say, okay, I'm going to isolate myself somewhere. And I just don't want to deal with anything anymore. So how one of us does that? move from all this trauma to be putting out, because salesperson people put themselves out there and put yourself out there in society, engaging with people you don't know, walk into a room and own it. How does the human psyche overcome all this?
Well, you know, for me, it was easy because I had developed a peculiar disorder called dissociative identity disorder. So what that meant is if you need the salesperson, great. The body's going to switch. The mind's going to switch. And you're going to have somebody different talking to you. And that's the truth. That's the peculiar thing about that disorder. Now, I will tell this to everybody in the audience. I do not have any of these things today. None of them. At one time, under doctor supervision, I had 7 pill boxes to manage my day and night. And that was all done with good intentions. I'm not knocking the doctors here, but I had way too much medication. And that's also a reason why I started diving deeply into neuroscience, because I was told by professional after professional that I could not be helped and that I would always have to be medicated. So here's the thing. I have no pills today, 0, none, nor do I have any of those disorders. I completely changed my brain using this protocol that we call the equation of life and abundant happiness. It began as a philosophy.
So, you know, I'm very happy to hear that you're not there anymore in terms of you're out of it, you're cured.
Yes.
And obviously you've done a lot of research, you worked with a lot of professionals, and I don't know the details there, but I'll let you explain that to people. But most people manage these conditions. You cured. That's very important, because most people, they live through this all their life and they have no way out of it. But to find way out of it, that's the breakthrough that we want to get into. Reflecting on your own journey, I guess, in the process to get where you are today. What do you think are the actual points that people need to be aware of to get to where you are right now? How did you go through it?
Yeah. So, I started my trauma therapy and I went through traditional channels. Okay. I found a therapist that was helpful. I worked with a psychologist that was helpful, but I literally had decades of treatment and I never got better. I didn't. I would be functioning, but I wasn't living the life that I was meant to live. So it literally was that near-death experience, that drowning, which set me off around a path to figure out how to heal myself, because it made me realize that 7 pill boxes was not okay. Even though I was under doctor's orders, it wasn't okay. It was too much. And so I started studying neuroscience. And as crazy as it is, I was fascinated by the fact that I could remember every vivid detail of September 11th. No matter who I talk to in here in the States, I can say September 11th and everybody knows where they were, what time of day, what they were watching with vivid detail. And it started making me think, how come I can remember that with vivid detail, but I can't remember this, that, and the other thing? That doesn't make sense to me. So I started literally studying neuroscience and how I could train my brain to be different. Because I realized that of the 68,000 thoughts that I have a day, 95% of them are done by my subconscious mind. And I don't really know what's in that subconscious mind and what are the stories and the shadows that my amygdala is saying that's actually incorrect. That was what I realized. I also had a really bad anger problem. I was very explosive with anger. And I would sadly take it out on the people that I managed. I'm being honest, because my life wasn't working. I was struggling with the worst mental health you can imagine. I had to go hop myself up, put myself on a stage, be the incredible motivating executive that I was. And then I would go back to my hotel room and literally hide in the closet because it was safe for me. I would sleep in the closet instead of the bed. And that was the life that I knew. So after that near-death experience, and realizing that my subconscious mind was the thing that had me trapped, I started studying the mind and I started literally analyzing my own behavior. And then I came across something miraculous. And I literally discovered this protocol accidentally. I started it out as a social media experiment. I wanted to find out what would happen if I got up every morning and watched the sun come up and celebrated the fact that I was alive, because after that NDE, that was really important to me. That was one thing. The second thing was I wanted to learn about gratitude, because I had posted a picture of this incredible sunrise with the question, what are you grateful for? And had all these people tell me what they were thankful for. And it got me thinking, I'm not grateful. I have this amazing life, but yet I really don't understand and embody gratitude the way so many people are. So I need to learn this gratitude thing. And what I didn't know was that gratitude is actually neuroscience. And the more I poured myself into gratitude as neuroscience, I became hooked that a word that was so simple could actually change a human being, change their behavior. Well, one day I experienced something that changed my life. I met a stranger, and the stranger did something for me that they didn't have to do. It was a random act of kindness that to them was menial, but to me, it was significant. And so I thanked her in a way that I've never done. And this is at a fast food counter. And I thanked this woman for something that she did in a genuine, authentic way. And when I did it, I ended up making her cry. And then I ended up crying. And then I got this incredible feeling of love and kindness. And it was something that we now call a gratitude cocktail. That's what we jokingly call it, because it comes when we experience gratitude in a very specific way. When it happened to me, I also noticed after the waves went through my body, my vagus nerve activated, and I felt my brain and my heart connect in this extremely strange way. And again, understand, I don't know anything about this stuff. And what have I just figured out? Because this feels amazing. And this is gratitude. So I walked away from that interaction completely changed by the kindness of a stranger and the feeling that overwhelmed me. And then I decided to try and repeat it. So I went out to colleagues and I created gratitude with them. And then interestingly, I did not get this cocktail. Why? And then I figured it out. It has to be with a stranger. And there's a very specific reason that our bodies will do when we perceive social risk. It puts our brain into a learning mode. So I started studying this protocol to see if I could duplicate it. And lo and behold, I figured out how to duplicate it. And then the craziest thing happened. 4 days later, my brain completely shifted. It went from negative thinking to and pointing out triggers everywhere to what I call glimmers, which is evidence that you're walking in alignment, you're on purpose, you're on path, everything is where you need to be, and you feel amazing. And that's how you should live your life, not encumbered by these things that are called self-limiting beliefs. So I've learned this remarkable protocol that is doing something in the neuroplasticity of the brain, and it's rapid. And I've now studied it, and we're now going to clinically study this inside of companies and also for individuals. So ultimately, this is going to be studied and offered to clinicians in psychology and therapists. It's also going to be offered to coaches. And then we're doing it inside of businesses. Now, here's why it's important, Robin. You got to remember that your employees are human beings and they all have lives outside of that business. And their inability to manage the things that we deal with as parents, as grandmothers and fathers and all those things, if we don't learn how to manage the emotional regulation of life's ebbs and flows, we end up bringing it to work. And when we bring it to work, it ends up costing us as business leaders money and focus. So I actually have looked at the research, and worldwide, it's a $1 trillion problem. Worldwide. It's in the hundreds of billions here in the United States. And it's lost productivity because that employee got in a fight with their teenage son. And then they came to work and they had their sales meeting. And that sales meeting didn't go so well because they were still irritated and angry. They weren't thinking about the sales team. They were thinking about that morning conversation. So they didn't pay attention. Those salespeople left the meeting, they weren't motivated, and now we lost productivity. So the key with culture change, if you want to change culture, you have to change the emotional regulation ability of the employee. And when you do that correctly, they show up to work happy. They can always balance their emotional energy, and they show up 100% because I teach them to be aware. So we teach experientially. That is what is unique about what we do. Most people, most culture change, we've all sat through these corporate America things where we've been PowerPointed to death and everybody tells us what to do. but nobody adopts it. Monday morning, when those people leave, so does the culture change program, because we're not doing it. We're just looking at it. We're thinking about it. So what I've created is experiential learning. It's heavily driven by psychology and very specific things that the mind uses to learn. So I've created experiences that employees learn inside of your company. And these experiences help them learn to better balance their emotional energy. And that means they show up and they give you 100% of their focus instead of 50%.
You know, you bring a very, very good topic, which is the effect of the outside world on an employee in a world where today we're all living through the real world where employees are replaceable. You hear layoffs everywhere. But in some cases, there are those employees that, I don't know what, you know, what department they belong into, but could be go-to-market people, where government, we're valuing these employees and they want them to be highly productive as well. So you talk about installing a system. You use the word install. What's the difference between training and install in your opinion? Why do you use the word install to change those types of behavior? Obviously, we're not putting software or firmware. You compare it to a firmware. I've seen some of your quotes out there, and it says, yeah, install a new firmware. You compare it to a technology firmware, which is, to a large extent, we are, you know, when we design technology, we design it after humans. So obviously, we are, you know, yes, we're in the initiation of technology.
Yes. So every human being has an operating system that they created by living their life. And as they grew and as they made mistakes, they failed at certain things. And then they wrote the wrong story. And then their ego embellished that story to protect the self. And that little self-limiting belief that happened to you when you're a little kid is still showing up in the boardroom today. And I see it all the time. So we all have an emotional operating system that was installed by living our lives and writing the wrong stories in immature brains. That's where it comes from. And unless you had emotionally intelligent parents that were really good at teaching you how to stand back up, and that failure wasn't what it was. Failure is feedback. Failure means, what do you need to learn? It means caution, reinvent, start over. It doesn't mean end, right? Experiential learning is installed because what I'm doing is I'm literally putting the individual in an exercise with their body. So they're going to learn things real time. And when the body learns things real time because they experienced it, it sticks. There's a 90% retention with experiential learning, only a 10% retention through traditional learning channels. That's why if you want to change culture, you got to change behavior. And the way you change behavior is by doing it under pressure. That's what I do. So I have 101 experiences that are custom tailored to the unique needs of every business, because every business is different and the needs of that company may be different. So I customize the exercises based upon what we're seeing. And then ultimately, what I teach is awareness. I start with awareness. I train everybody how to become aware and stay aware. Then I train them on emotional intelligence and emotional regulation, because we all have 0.25 seconds between when the amygdala will fire and when it will execute the wrong story from the subconscious. So I train everybody how to grab that 0.25 seconds from the amygdala, transfer the thought to the prefrontal cortex live, real time, where you can make a better rational decision. Once you master EQ, then the next step is metacognition, which is the ability to analyze your own behavior real time. So ultimately, I teach all of that through experiences.
So when somebody's in your classroom, a participant is in your session, and they go through, you've taken them through a session, I'm assuming it's like an hour or two session. Is that what I'm guessing?
We typically install it in a couple. We break it up into sessions. So we do 2-3 hour sessions with your employees to go over the program, how it works. Everything is interactive. We do everything by video. So when an employee completes an exercise, they share the video And then it goes into a community platform that's organized specifically for that company so that as other people in the company complete that exercise, you can share what you learned and, more importantly, the fun time that you had doing it. Because all of the exercises are designed to be fun. They're engaging. They're interesting. They're going to make you think. And more importantly, they're going to reveal every self-limiting belief that the human being has. And that's the most important part. So in each exercise, I create a space of safety. That's polyvagal theory. If there's no safety, the human won't learn. All right. So it has to be safe. So all of the exercises are done with family, friends, and people that you work with. You may also engage with some strangers along your way. Okay. So the exercises have safety, number one, but they also have social risk. Why social risk is important, Robin, is because our brains, when our brains predict something in the future and it identifies social risk, it goes into an elevated learning mode. And it basically says, caution, there's something going on that may go sideways, so you better be paying attention. That's a special learning mode. All right. The other thing that's going on is in this exercise, the employee's brain is going to predict average or failure. I'm going to ask them to do something. They're going to look at it and they're going to resist it. So their brain is going to predict average or a negative experience by design. All right. So we're now in the memory reconsolidation window because I've got your brain in learning mode. And the brain has also predicted something that's average or failure. Okay. So then what happens is you complete the exercise, and the exercises are designed to deliver what you do not expect. So that means kindness, love, gratitude, connection, all of the amazing pro-social human emotions that are so distant in the business world and the world we live in today. So what ends up happening is the brain goes, wait a minute, I predicted average or failure, but I just got kindness, love, and goodness. I better remember this. And because the brain has entered a malleable state in the memory reconsolidation window, it updates the physiological response from the body to the new experience from the experience. That's how it works. And it is rapid. And when we do this correctly, there's like an explosion of neuroplastic growth in the brain. And that is how we install it, because it's experienced with 90% retention. How many times?
So they don't fall back, basically, right? So they don't fall back to the old ways after you're done with them.
Correct. The brain updates the physiological response from the body. You see, most people don't listen to the body. They just let the body run the show. So that means you're running your default mode network and you're actually a zombie. That's what it means. You're not really paying attention. True. Yeah. So when you're actually aware, you have a strategic advantage of your competition. And I'm telling you right now, we are pioneering experiential neuroscience. The qualitative results of what we're doing is off the charts. That's why we're going to move this to clinical study. And ultimately, it'll be offered in a number of different ways and certified for professionals. That's where it's headed.
No, Thane, I've seen some of your work and you use the phrase real perceived pressure. That's different from role play simulation. I mean, most of these exercises, they use role play. They put two and two together, one and another person together, and they say act something or do role play about a situation, whatever. Is there a distinction here that is concrete that somebody who's listening to this show today with you and me can, you know, only be done in a workshop-based training, to be honest with you, like what you're just describing? So what is the real perceived pressure difference from role play, and what can people take away from this conversation?
Yeah, okay, great question. So every one of the exercises, like I said, has a sense of risk in it, all right? And let's take one called humiliation, the emotion of humiliation. We've all been humiliated at some point in our life, most likely as a child. And it's a strong response from the body, big response from the body. All right. So humiliation and shame will oftentimes show up from the psyche in keeping you doing some things where you may experience shame or humiliation. All right, so here's an example. I'm going to play an experience on you where I'm going to ask you to go into the lunchroom and put on some music, and you're going to start dancing and laughing and having a good time in the lunchroom on your own with some music. Now, most people, when they hear that, think, I'm not going to do that because people are going to laugh at me and they're going to think odd things about me. So hello, there's your first self-limiting belief. You shouldn't feel humiliation because you want to experience happiness and joy. Where is that coming from? So let's go do the exercise, right? So now you're going to go into the lunchroom, you're going to put in your headphones, and you're going to start dancing. Or maybe you turn it up and you ask some of your coworkers to dance with you. What you're going to find is that people will join in, they'll laugh, they'll have a good time, and then you just learned the most important lesson. That I can be humiliated in public, and I can be vulnerable, and I can still be safe, and I can do this. I can do this. Oh my gosh, why have I always been so afraid to show up like this? How many things in my life have I not got to do because I was afraid of shame and humiliation? Was that real pressure for that employee to go into the lunchroom and turn on some music and start dancing and encourage other people to do it? Yes, it was. But what they learned was an automatic update to their nervous system and to the tape that subconscious mind will play in the future. So the next time that person has an opportunity where they feel humiliation, they'll feel the response in the body. But the amygdala is not going to fire the old tape because I just updated it through memory reconsolidation and predictive mismatch. And the body and the brain are now in sync and they remember. Okay, I'll give you a great story about an executive that I worked with, a CEO. Okay, this guy came to a lunch meeting and we were talking about what I do, and he was a little skeptical, which is okay. And I proceeded to tell him that my job is to locate and dismiss self-limiting beliefs in your employees. Because if I can make them manage their emotional balance at home and at work, we're going to have productivity through the roof. So I said to him, everybody's got a self-limiting belief. And he looked me in the eye and he said, no, we don't. I don't have any fear. I'm not afraid of anything, Thane. And I said, really? You don't have any self-limiting beliefs. You're afraid of nothing. And he said, yeah, I'm ex-military. There's nothing that would scare me. And then I said, okay, do me a favor. Right now, would you knock over that? I put him on the spot right then. I said, do me a favor. I want you to knock over that glass of water on the table right there that's next to you. Go, do it. And he goes, Are you freaking crazy? No, I'm not knocking the glass of water over. And then I looked at him and I said, there's a self-limiting belief. Why are you resisting something that could just be an accident? Because somewhere in your past, you spilled something and you were humiliated and you were shamed by your mother, your father, somebody. And that's why your subconscious is resisting me when I ask you to do it. So do me a favor right now, dump over the glass of water, please. Okay, he wouldn't do it. So I knocked mine over. I knocked mine over right in the lunch meeting. Okay, and lo and behold, the waiter walked by and she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Let me help me. And we cleaned it up. And so I proved to him that nothing negative actually happened. Nothing. But what did I learn? I learned I could knock over a glass of water in front of a CEO and it didn't get in my lap. And I was happy about that. Okay, I got fireworks, which is even better. Okay,
that's good.
Yeah. So that was the beginning to an amazing conversation because he just found his first self-limiting belief. Well, how many others do you have? That's the problem. They hide in our shadow, in our psyche, and they're governed by an amygdala and a prefrontal cortex and all kinds of limbic systems and brain matter. And somehow it creates thought. And somehow we can change our thought and we can change our default thought, but it's done through experiential neuroscience. The days of hiring motivational speakers to come in and change culture is over. You're wasting your money. When that consultant gets on the plane and flies away, so does your culture. That's the truth. So if you want to change your culture, it doesn't. You have to change the heart and the mind of the employee. And when you teach them how to balance, they're going to show up work happy, abundantly happy. That's why my company is called It's Pure Love. Every exercise we do in the deck is about awareness, emotional regulation, love, kindness, and gratitude. Okay? So it's about kindness and human connection, the way it once was. Like, I remember what business was like as a little boy. I went on sales calls with my grandfather, and he was a professional salesperson. And yep. I can remember this day when he had to take apart. He sold heavy equipment, and he had a machine go down on a line. And I went with him because he was babysitting. And so I went with my grandfather on a sales call to fix the machine that was down. But the thing that sat with me was that at the end of the interaction, which I was just a little boy watching this, the gentleman who was the shop supervisor patted my grandfather on the back and said, "Thane, thank you so much. I love and appreciate you. Love and appreciate you." And I remember walking away and I said to my grandpa, "Grandpa, he's not family. How do you know that, man? Why did he say that he loved you?" And he said, "Because in life, we love everybody. And that includes the people we work with. And don't ever forget that. Treat everybody in a loving manner and watch how good your life actually is." So I took away that little lesson from just that little boy that one day. And the reality is we need to put love and kindness and awareness back into business. And we have to start remembering that these employees, they have all kinds of ugly things going on in their lives. And if we can help them better manage that emotional energy and teach them how to balance it so that they are always abundantly happy, can you imagine what happens to the productivity of your company? Okay, so I'm super excited. We started a partnership with an amazing company called Workplace.io. Workplace.io has an amazing algorithm that they've created, and we install it in the ecosystem of your company. So I install it using Slack, Teams, and we can also do Zoom. And then what it does is it goes into your communication channels and it uses AI to measure 6 very important metrics inside of the business real time. This is a game changer. Because now I can go to a CEO and in about 30 minutes of time installing the software, I can give you a burnout score. I can give you an executive decision-making score. I can give you a psychological safety risk score. I can tell you how well your alignment score is across your employees real time. You're not waiting 30 days or 60 days for that expensive survey that doesn't reflect current trends. It was 60 days ago, and now you're just getting the results of the study. What if you could dial in?
Yeah,
and go,
I've answered enough employee survey thing. Just, it's BS, to be honest with you. I just don't believe in it.
Workplace.io has got 1,200 what they call signal points. So they're using NLP, okay? They're using NLP, natural linguistic programming, to quantify human behavior. So as we email and as we talk to people, it is analyzing a gazillion, 1,200 different algorithms are analyzing your employee behavior. So I come in, I take a baseline measurement. I also grab every KPI that you want me to track. You produce what's important to you. And then we're going to take a snap line of what your organization looks like. We're going to install that software. And then we're going to install Ella Ecos, which is the emotional operating system for optimal human performance. And it's literally installed by doing. That's what makes it different. Your employees aren't sitting in a workshop. They're actually in your business, interacting with departments, completing tasks. And in completing those tasks, they're also finding self-limiting beliefs and they're creating connection between people that perhaps they didn't know or it was hostile. How this works. So when you change the hearts and mind of the employee, you now change the culture. It sticks and it's permanent. And I can show you real time as the numbers begin dropping, as the skills are identified and then learned real time by the employees. So I'm the only company that does this. And that's what's unique about our offering.
Absolutely. Yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, one of the things that we, I've spent most of my life in corporate world is that employee survey means nothing, in my opinion. Because people put things on paper, they probably, think, what my manager expect me to say?
Right.
Is it truly how I feel? And, here's the CEO saying, "I read every comment." Oh, yeah? Okay. Then the people say, "Well, I've been commenting on my employee survey every quarter and you didn't do anything about what I commented on. Obviously, you're not reading them, or maybe you don't want to hear it." That's a different story. So it sounds like you get to the real emotion or the real feeling of how these employees are feeling without even them noticing or saying it.
Correct.
Maybe you're monitoring things that they probably non-intrusive, like silent in the background. They're monitoring their communication style, the way they complete the projects, that kind of thing. Is that correct?
Correct. So it's looking at all kinds of different metrics and data. If you're on Slack and you're in the software department and you're developing some code that's got a bug in it and you need the project manager to take a look at something and you're pinging the project manager and the software knows the project manager is sitting at his desk, but he's not paying any attention. Well, then the words start escalating. As the words escalate, it's going to change the score because the emotional health of the organization is literally changing real time between two employees that aren't getting along. That's what happens. So the software detects it, but here's what it doesn't do. It's all anonymous. You can never take the data and isolate it to an employee. And that's really important for everybody to understand. It's all anonymized data. You can isolate it into groups, but you can't isolate it small enough to be able to figure out who said what and who actually has a burnout problem. It won't do that. So that is the safety and the trust that needs to be there. And the workplace.io guys have what's called the Trust Center, and we direct employees to it. They see exactly how this software works. And at the end of the day, the employees opt in. They don't have to opt in. It's optional, okay? But all we need is a certain small percentage of employees to opt in, and then we're going to get the real score, because every email that comes to that employee, every Slack communication that comes to that employee, every team communication will be analyzed and scored by the model and deliver a real-time score to your executive. So as an executive of a massive company now, I've actually got a cell phone that holds the emotional dashboard of every department in my company. I can drill it in. I can look at trends. I can see that our burnout score is increasing. I can see that our executive capacity is decreasing. These are all things. And then what's neat about it is they're using AI to coach the CEOs on how to help fix the behavior. So the model that I use will be modeled to incorporate the equation of life and abundant happiness, which is the philosophy that I teach to people. Okay.
That's right.
Now the AI model is actually coaching exactly what I teach in the workshops. It's super powerful.
Now, you spoke about burnout. I'd love to get your take on this one. Burnout is for many people is the word that everyone uses, but almost nobody defines precisely. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe people talk about burnout, like if it's, I've got a headache. I don't know how to precisely diagnose this one. How do you define it in your opinion? And how does it manifest differently in senior leaders versus someone who's on a front line?
Well, you know, I mean, somebody on the front line, we call those convenience emotional workers. Those people are beat up by the public regularly. And the worst industry is healthcare, right? We have the worst mental health is in healthcare. The second one is dentists, okay? And it's burnout because they're working long hours. They're working in difficult, high emotional situations where people are dying and they don't have a way to manage their emotions. They don't have a way to walk away when they've worked really hard and a patient coded and they weren't able to save that patient's life. There's no way for that employee to manage and better emotionally balance the magnification of that situation. And that's what I help them learn how to do, is to balance their emotional energy in the present moment at all times. I teach with pattern recognition and cognitive pattern interrupt sequences. So I'm actually showing you an amazing device that is custom made and designed. And I actually teach awareness from this bracelet, okay? I teach you a cognitive pattern interrupt sequence, and I have a candidate put this on their body, because when it tactile stimulates the body, I ask you to ask yourself a question, am I present? Okay? It's shocking how this works, because at the end of the day, you're going to have a little chart next to your desk and you're going to see that a certain percentage of the time, maybe 20, 25%, you're actually on focus and present. You're probably spending 40 to 50% of your time in your default mode network in your past, and the remainder is stuff you're worrying about in your future. So literally within 24 hours, using Habian learning, cognitive pattern interrupt, and a funny little bracelet, I can teach any employee how to become aware. And it works. It's mind-boggling how it works. That's just an example.
Absolutely. Now, we talk about this system as measurable and scalable. And for CFO who's listening to this right now and wants a number, what are the actually measuring before and after? What are we, from a CFO perspective, what are we measuring before and after?
Yes. So I'm going to meet with your executive C-suite managers and find out the nuances and the important KPIs of your business, because every business is different. So we're going to take a snapshot of the important KPIs in your company that you measure. Then we're going to take an emotional snapshot of the health of your company by installing our software from Workplace.io. We're going to get a dashboard and we're going to get a number. And then we're going to implement and install Ella Ecos, the emotional operating system in the employees, which is taught through experiences. There's actually 101 experiences in the deck of cards that employees complete over time. The beautiful thing about that is because they're experiences, no matter when they play the card, it will always be a different experience because it's with a different person at a different time. It's always going to have a different variable. So the great thing about this culture program is that it's consistent and it doesn't go away. So once we install this, we encourage employees to pull what we call in two exercises a week. And what it does is it just encourages communication, keeps the heart open, keeps focused on the best positive emotions out there, love, kindness, gratitude. And we put love back into business. And when we do it, it's amazing what happens. So then you're going to watch real time and we're going to keep taking snapshots of the KPIs. You're going to watch your sales start increasing. Why? Because your salesmen's heads are not in the tank. They're dialed in. They're 100% on you, on task, on focus, and emotionally balanced. They're not bringing their personal garbage to work because I've taught them how to emotionally balance that and not bring it with them. That's incredible. It really
is. It sounds like, you know, for the human brain, it sounds like you put the, you know how like they do yard sale? Or garage sale? You took all that old garbage and you put it in a garage sale, get rid of it. Now we got to do clean sweep renovation.
Yeah, this is neuroscience. This is everything that I do is backed by existing literature, but we've discovered something truly unique. And that's why we're going to get it studied, because I've learned something incredibly valuable around some hormones. And there's some specific hormones that I can teach people how to release into the bloodstream, and it'll give you abundant happiness every time. And it's a trick that I do every day. Every day, I find somebody in the world that needs some kindness and love from me, and I pour my heart into them. And every time I do that, it fills my heart back up and I walk away abundantly happy and grateful for being human.
I was going to say, you did all this without pharmaceuticals. It sounds like you're going back to pharmaceuticals.
You know, no, absolutely not. Here's why. The hormones that I'm working with are acetylcholine, vasopressin, oxytocin, dopamine, a little bit of serotonin, and adrenaline.
Okay.
Okay. And I can teach you how to create those in your body naturally.
Naturally.
Yes. Okay. Once you learn how to do it, you don't need those drugs because the happiest drug in the world is love. And
it's something you already have. You already built into it.
Gratitude. Yeah. Gratitude is neuroscience. It literally quiets the amygdala. Let me give you an example. Okay. Have you ever, in your professional experience, had an employee that exploded at you? That just unleashed. They were angry over something that happened and they lost their temper. Has that ever happened to you?
For me, yeah, it did. Yeah.
And it can be really
scary, actually.
Yeah, scary and ugly. And what does it do to your emotional health? And what does it do to that person's emotional health? Okay. Because you didn't forget that and you carried it with you for a while, as did that person. So what if I had trained that employee to better manage his amygdala, because that's what's going on there. His amygdala is driving his subconscious behavior. So what if I could teach him a cognitive pattern interrupt sequence that he could use at any time to quiet the amygdala? Okay, because that's what gratitude is. It quiets the amygdala and it strengthens the prefrontal cortex. So in that example, when I have people yell at me or they get mad at me, I approach them with gratitude. This is how I do it. I say, hey, wait a minute. First off, I want to thank you for the volume and the way that you're communicating to me. I want you to know that I see it and I definitely hear it. And I know, John, that this is important to you. So can you do me one favor? Can we just bring the volume down a little bit, pull the emotions out? Because I've heard you and I appreciate your anger, but I'm thinking we could have a level-headed conversation here and probably solve this a lot easier if we don't. Can you meet me there? So I just use gratitude to quiet that man's amygdala, and then he becomes rational because his thought went from the amygdala to the prefrontal cortex. Who did that? I did, because I was trained in emotional intelligence and I was trained with Ella Ecos, and I know that I can manipulate the emotions of other people, and it's my job to do that. That's intelligence. That's metacognition.
So I know you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but let me address this, because a lot of people are thinking along these lines. As AI takes over more cognitive work, I guess, and what happens to the premium emotional intelligence in this case? So there is a premium on emotional intelligence as AI takes over. There's that contradiction, if you will, or I don't know if it's going to be,
you know,
we don't know where this is going to go at this point, but AI is, you know, moving into that cognitive work, if you will. And does one become most valuable human skill? Like, what is the most valuable human skills as AI continue to develop?
I mean, I think we're definitely in for some weird times, because we're still learning how to model emotion in the behavior models. Like, using NLP, like what Workspace IO is doing is amazing work, but we still, I mean, look, at the end of the day, we are a human being, and we're literally gathering millions of data by the second and analyzing and making decisions. Machines are never going to have the input ability that the human body has. So those that understand AI and bring it into the workplace, I think it's important that we embrace it, but we don't lose the fact that what makes us so special is the ability to understand our own emotions, and to be able to comfort and give physical affection to people that we live with and work with, right? And that's, I think, the part that we have to figure out how to bridge that. Like, we're seeing the jobs going. You're seeing it. We're all seeing it. Nobody wants to talk about it, but let's be real. There's all kinds of jobs that are going away. So we're going to have to learn how to become more emotionally resilient, and we're going to have to learn how to work with this software. So don't stick your head in the, you know, don't be one of those guys that sticks your head in the
sand. Yeah, the storm will go away now.
I'm too old for that. Yeah. Well, then you might as well check the box and go, you know, go to Sarasota, Florida and sit on the beach.
That's where right.
You're done.
Yeah. No, Thane, you know, as we come to closer to the end of our conversation, if you could give one practice, if you don't mind, to every leader who's listening to this conversation right now, one thing they could do this week to begin upgrade their own emotional operating system, what would that be?
I would tell you to lean into empathy. Like, that is something that the best CEOs that I ever worked for, they valued empathy. And I would tell you that listening skills are the most important. People just want to be heard and they want to be seen. And when you give them that respect, it's amazing how many hurdles and jumps they'll jump for you when you literally treat them like family. Okay. I worked for some amazing companies that were huge. One of them was ADP, and ADP has a really amazing culture. Even though it's a massive Fortune 500 company, their culture is one of kindness and love, and it was an amazing place to work.
And what are the conversations that you wish more organizations were having, and almost none of them are?
I think you've got to work on installing emotional decision making, and you've got to learn how to make your people aware, because that's the biggest problem we have. These phones have ruined us and our ability to focus and distract. 100%. And you know, these dopamine devices, which is exactly what they are, they're changing our brains, okay? I've got grandsons that I'm telling you right now are developing in ways that I'm not happy with, because this thing right here is ruining their attention span. Okay. I would go back, you know, I get hot about things like suicides, because I don't know about you, but there's an alarming number of men our age that are alone in the world, and they're dying left and right. Okay. Those are people that didn't learn how to manage their emotional energy. They poured their lives into work and they lost their lives to work. Okay. So we have to take the time to balance everything correctly in life. And that also means a work-life balance. And that's important for CEOs to recognize that, you know, we can't give you everything, but we will if we feel admired and loved. And that's the truth. Like, I go back to the leaders where I busted my ass. It was because they treated me with empathy, kindness, and respect. I'd do
anything. It's amazing, eh? When people treat people right, like what the other person will do for you, it's crazy.
That's right.
They'll move mountain for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I've worked for leaders that were what I call, you know, barkers. All they do is bark and yell and scream. And they ruin the workforce. Like, that kind of management is so old school.
Yeah.
That is old school, and your people don't respect you, are not going to follow you. But if you listen to an employee, and you said, you know what, I'm sorry, I heard about that thing going on with your daughter, that's really unfortunate, but I want you to know that I'm thinking about you. And you know what, if you need a little extra time the next couple of days to help manage the situation, I want you to know that's okay with me.
There are some weird CEO behaviors out there. I heard like of the friend of the CEO club, you know, they have like an inner circle. Depends on the size of the company, obviously.
Yeah.
And those inner circle, they get a treatment. And as the circle gets away from, far away from that inner circle, you know, the treatment gets negative and negative until you get to the edge, the far edge. Right. Yeah, it's pretty bizarre out there. I did a podcast you'd be very interested in on cybersecurity. And, it, you know, they're calling it the cognitive Pearl Harbor. So the human brain is the new attack service. As you mentioned earlier, like the devices that we're carrying and the mobile and, you know, anything electronic that we're getting in touch with. For instance, I heard, well, on the podcast, somebody says to me that the new Apple AirPods, for instance, they have the ability to collect 32 types of data on our behavior from, you know, everything that we say, do, feel, temperature, blood pressure, and the data is being gathered and to get to know us a lot more. That, I mean, I don't know if it's for good, bad, or ugly. I have no idea, but the data is being collected. And those are the areas where you mentioned, you know, like the attention span. It's really what's killing us right now. And you don't have to really infiltrate a company security system anymore. All you have to do is just really fool somebody and to let you in. And that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Thane, where do people find you and follow your work or bring you in if they need a conversation based on our podcast today? I hope it landed with a few people. I'm sure it did. If they want to engage with you, how do they do that?
My website, which is itspurelove.com. There is a button on the homepage where you can schedule 30 minutes with me and I can learn a little bit about your business. And if it makes sense, we'll move forward with some discovery and then typical sales process.
You know, and I just sent you a connection request on LinkedIn. If you don't mind just connecting with me, it helps in the podcast here. But at the same time, I want to mention to the audience, if you can't get a hold of Thane, you know, you can reach out to me and I'll be happy to connect you and do an introduction. I do that with all the podcast guests.
Thanks.
If any of our audience wants to connect with Thane, just let me know and I'll facilitate an introduction. Happy to do that.
Isprelove.com, Thane Martin on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. Thane, what do you think of this conversation so far we've had today?
Absolutely wonderful. I appreciate it. And thank you for bringing a new way of changing culture. Like, experiential neuroscience is being pioneered by our company. It's being studied clinically. It will be done at a university. And I can't wait to publish the results. It's amazing what we're doing.
You know, I want to thank you so much today, Thane. You brought so much passion to the conversation. I can see it in your conversation, in the tone of voice and the engagement that you gave this topic. Obviously something you feel strongly about. Obviously you feel something that you've dedicated, you know, part of your life for this. And I support you 100%. If anything I can help you, if anything this channel can do to support you, you know, you're welcome back anytime. If you want to bring us an update to share with others, feel free to come back.
Yeah, that would be great. I appreciate that. Thank you. I've enjoyed the conversation and I love engaging with people. So if you've got questions, put them out there. I'll do my best to reply back to each person.
Thank you so much for the offer. I really appreciate it. That would be grateful for that. And for the audience, I want to thank you so much for following us on the recording of this particular episode. If you're coming on YouTube and watching us on YouTube, thank you so much for watching the episode. If you are listening to us on the podcast streaming platforms, thanks for listening in. And if you are reading our summary of this particular episode and all the other episodes on our blog post, that's the robinayoub.blog, thanks again for subscribing. I really appreciate it. And I will see everybody at the next episode. And I hope you guys have a good afternoon or good evening, whatever you are. I'll see you at the next episode. Thank you, Thane.
Thank you so much. Take care.